Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Well, it's March 2nd, and I'm so happy you can join us today for our technology article on the new face of robots. Well, we're glad you're back for our second day of our technology article. Yesterday, we started talking about new technologies that help robots make inroads in daily life. And make inroads here, we talked about how it just means integrator coming deeper into our daily lives. They've been around for quite some time, but now they're becoming, you know, more, we see them more and more, we hear about them, they're involved in different fields in our lives. So today I have with me in the studio
Brian
and Simon,
and I'm Linda, and I'm glad that we have a chance to talk more about the uses of robots today. But first of all, let's review a little bit about what we talked about yesterday. What struck you about our article yesterday, Brian?
One thing that struck me was the fact that the robots are dexterous and they're capable of assembling things like smartphones, and especially the fact that they can work safely so close to people.
Okay, you use that word dexterous. What does that mean?
That means they're really skilled making movements with their hands.
Okay. And what about you, Simon? What struck you about yesterday's article?
I've been thinking a lot about the sidebar from yesterday, which was called Happy Robots. I've been thinking about the different ways that we see robots in our culture. Sometimes we see them as sinister, which means dangerous or evil sort of characters. Other times we see them as lovable and helpful little, I wanted to say creatures, but they're not creatures, are they? Lovable little robots.
Right. Actually, what struck me about yesterday's article is how well it's written, because there is a lot of imagery that the author uses. The author is John Schwartz, and this author uses a lot of imagery in describing what robots can do. He talks about, you know, it's the beginning of them, really, and he talks about them being in their infancy, you know, and some of these, this kind of terminology that he uses really can paint a clearer picture in our minds. And also, I like the word that he introduced yesterday, or the term. It's actually an idiom, to date, okay? Now, it doesn't mean you're going to go on a date with your boyfriend or girlfriend. It just means if you see to date, comma, we have done something, that means up until the present time, from the past up until now. And it's over and finished, and so now we're going to look into the future. And that certainly is what this technology article is talking about, the future of robots in society. So I hope that you'll turn to page 11 if you have your advanced magazine with you, and we're going to take a look at three more uses. Yesterday we talked about industrial use of robots, and today we're going to talk about three more uses of robots. So join me.
Military use. Within 10 years, squadrons of unmanned planes will swarm enemy sites like killer bees, launching missiles and avoiding detection with sophisticated jamming devices. Self-programmed submarines will replace dolphins to detect and disarm mines. Crab-like robots will crawl into buildings to sniff out chemical stashes. The transition to mechanized weaponry is key to the military's transformation from heavy ground forces to smaller human units fortified with robotic weapons. Search and rescue missions. The palm-sized winged schematic sitting on a table at Carnegie Mellon's robotics lab is a vampire bat bot for above-the-fray surveillance of action scenes and search and rescue. The 100-gram foot-wide bot is propelled from the ground by an internal spring. Once airborne, it glides with the wind and would be part of a swarm of bots that communicate with each other. Research. Liquid Robotics makes a surfboard-shaped device for collecting data underwater, such as ocean depth, post-hurricane damage, fish density populations, weather forecasting, and shark surveillance. The service would be sold to researchers. Wave Glider is its first marine robot. It operates in environments where you don't want to send people, Voss said. Our bots go out in 35-foot waves and 100-mile-per-hour winds.
Well, we have three areas that we're going to talk about for the use of that are going to be using robots, and they're quite different, actually. They're quite different, and yet in some ways they're quite the same. So let's take a look at military use, and we also have a lot of vocabulary in some rather long sentences and a lot of imagery again. So in military use, it says that within 10 years, so that means by 2023, right? Squadrons of unmanned planes. Okay. First, let's take it. What is a squadron?
Squadron is a military unit, and it can come in different sizes, but it basically means a group of these unmanned planes.
And they will swarm enemy sites like killer bees. That's great imagery. So to swarm something here means what?
It means to surround it and come together in a giant group and to surround something. And if it were really killer bees, that could be deadly because killer bees, they get their name from their ability to actually kill people with their sting.
All right. And these are going to be unmanned planes, okay? And they will be able to do what? They'll have what kind of capacity?
Well, they'll be launching missiles and avoiding detection with sophisticated jamming devices. So they'll be shooting missiles at their targets. But more than that, they will be almost invisible to things like radar. They'll be avoiding detection because of these sophisticated jamming devices or devices and electronic things that make them hard for things like radar to see.
Okay, so this isn't – jamming device is not something we eat here. When you jam something, what do? It's also used as a verb.
You really confuse something that is electronic, I think. I gather these jamming devices actually sort of send out a signal that confuses other electronics that are trying to detect them.
Okay, so they're, as you said, they're like almost invisible and non-detectable. Okay.
Maybe not literally, but yeah, to the other electronics.
Right.
Yeah.
And then we also will see self-programmed submarines, okay? So that's kind of interesting that they're actually self-programmed.
Yeah, I guess that's similar to being unmanned. So they're self-programmed, they're independent, and they can kind of learn and correct themselves and maybe plot their own courses.
Right. And what are they going to be doing?
They're going to replace dolphins who in the past were used to detect and disarm mines. So good for the dolphins. Get to protect and save the dolphins and use these sophisticated self-programmed submarines to replace the dolphins. So this is very positive for the dolphins.
Right. And then we go on to see other kinds of robots. They have one that looks like a crab, and it will go into buildings to sniff out chemical stashes. Now, this is a two-word verb here, okay, or a phrasal verb, sniff out, and it just means to detect or to find it. So usually if something is stashed, chemical stashes, probably they're hidden away somewhere, and they're very difficult to find, so they can use a robot to go down into the buildings to find these.
Yeah, right now many of our listeners will have had the experience of visiting an airport and having their luggage sniffed by dogs. I imagine these crab-like robots would perform a very similar sort of function.
Mm-hmm. And then we're also going to there's a transition coming in mechanized weaponry.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a big transition to mechanized weaponry as opposed to human soldiers. So this can save people's lives and maybe even be more efficient because a lot of these small robots can actually be undetected a lot easier.
That's right. It goes on to say that we're undergoing a transition to mechanized weaponry because it's key to the military's transformation from heavy ground forces to smaller human units fortified with robotic weapons. And what that really means is we're seeing a shift from heavy military units, things like tanks and artillery, towards things like people who have maybe mechanized or robotic tools that they are able to use, which give them the same sort of abilities as those heavier military machines.
That'll be really quite a change. Also for transportation, you know, uses as well for transporting like heavy weaponry into a battle area.
That's right.
And then we have search and rescue missions, okay? So what does it say here?
Well, it talks about something that's in the plans, a palm-sized winged schematic. So it's a technical drawing of this object, of this special vampire bat robot created by the Carnegie Mellon Robotics Lab. So, Simon, what exactly would this vampire bat bot do?
Well, it says it's for above-the-fray surveillance of action scenes. Now, that's really interesting. Above-the-fray, what is a fray?
A fray is an intense activity.
Yeah, that's right. So this robot is above the fray, meaning it is not really affected by that sort of dangerous situation or intense activity. Instead, it's flying high above it, and it's using surveillance. So it's watching all of the things that are happening, kind of spying on those things. And so it can report back on what is happening, but more importantly, it can do things like search and rescue and try to find people or things that are lost.
Right, and it only weighs 100 grams. That's pretty light. That's like a fourth of a pound.
It's pretty tiny.
Yeah,
very, very small.
And a foot wide, so that's about 12 inches wide, and it's propelled from the ground by an internal spring. So that just means it lifts up off the ground, right?
Bounces itself into the air, I guess.
Apparently. Yeah. But then it glides. Once it gets airborne, just means in the air. So once it's up flying, it glides, okay? It glides with the wind. So it means that it's wind-powered or flies along with the wind, and it would be part of a swarm. So here we have that word swarm again, which just means many, okay? A swarm of bots that would communicate with each other. That's how such a tiny instrument probably can send back, can survey so big of an area and send back so much information.
That's right. It can work with a network of other similar robots.
And then we go into the research field, okay? We go back to Liquid Robotics, which is organization or company that we talked about yesterday, with Bill Voss being the CEO of that company. And what does it say about that?
Well, they're making a surfboard-shaped device. I believe that's shown here on the top of page 10, if I'm not mistaken. And they use this device for collecting a lot of different data from underwater, from the ocean. Things such as ocean depth, post-hurricane damage, fish densities, and weather forecasting. And then one other kind of dangerous thing. What is that?
Well, let's go through that list first and talk about what some of those things are. Ocean depth, obviously. People sometimes need to know how deep part of an ocean is for various things they're doing. Post-hurricane damage, that's an interesting one. We often think about hurricane or typhoon damage as being something that just affects the land. But obviously, it also has an effect on, the geography of the underwater areas, maybe making it hazardous for boats to travel in places so that they would want this robot to be able to check out what damage has occurred. It says fish density populations, very, very important. We know that a number of people are concerned about fish becoming more and more scarce in the environment, and so they want to see where the fish are and what kinds they are. Weather forecasting and shark surveillance.
That's a wide range, isn't it? Shark surveillance, especially in areas, recreational areas. They want to know if there are sharks in those areas and also to find out really their life patterns, their lifelong patterns, where they go and what they're doing in areas where they are.
That's right. And they also give us a clue here as to why this surfboard-shaped robot can do all of these different things. It's because they're going to sell this service to researchers so that researchers are able to pay in order to have this robot do some of their research work for them.
Right, because this is such a wide range. You know, this is a wide range of activities that it can be used for, so it's good for a lot of different organizations to be able to use it. And it's called the Wave Glider, okay, is its first marine robot. And we know marine has to do with water, okay? So it's for use in the water. It operates in environments where you don't want to send people.
That's right.
So we've seen that before, too, like in the military use and the search and rescue in dangerous situations where it's a high cost of human life if you send somebody in. These bots can go out in 35-foot waves and 100-mile-per-hour winds. So those are pretty high waves.
No doubt there are other benefits too, like the ones that we saw with industrial use robots, time savings, cost savings, things like that.
And also for ocean depth, there are some areas of the ocean that are not really inhabited. Well, we don't really know what the habitation is like there. It's very, very difficult to reach those. So it's good to know really how deep those certain parts of the ocean are.
It's neat, too, Linda, to see that yesterday we learned about the author talking about the commercial potential for robotics. And here we see, as Simon said, that this service can be sold to researchers. So the makers of these special robots, they have a motive for continuing to develop this technology.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're in the, toward the bottom of page 11 in the left-hand column, and we're going to finish the reading for today. So if you join me at the section that starts Becoming Reality.
Becoming Reality. Robots are becoming de rigueur as populations age and working couples look for help while at work. Toyota and Honda, maker of the Asimo, are building robo-servants to help Japan's aging population. Experts expect dog-walking bots and driverless cars in the near future. Probably not surprising, then, that people increasingly are more comfortable with walking, talking machines, said Eric Schweikart, design director of Modular Robotics. He points to newfangled dishwashers and refrigerators as entry-level household robots powered by microprocessors. Robots will be bigger than the PC in 10 to 20 years, but it will be linked to your computing device either in the cloud or on your person, said Paul Berberian, CEO of Orbotics, which makes Sphero, a robot ball controlled by smartphones. Like others in the industry, Berberian envisions affordable toy robots for the mass market first, followed by larger devices. While specific task home robots are cool, the big play will be entertainment, he said. Tons of technology starts out in the game entertainment sector and then migrates to performing common tasks.
So this section is going to talk about how robots are becoming reality. Do you want to tell us about it, Simon?
That's right. It says here robots are becoming de rigueur as populations age and working couples look for help while at work. That term de rigueur, it's a very interesting term. It means common or everyday, normal. But the reason they're becoming de rigueur is also very interesting here. It says, as populations age, why do you suppose robots are becoming more common as people get older?
They can help them maybe perform some household tasks, perhaps?
Sort of a similar use to something that working couples might be looking for.
I could use one to clean my house. So I think that actually is really what they're talking about, to perform some everyday tasks that need to be done maybe while a person's at work, or also for populations are aging, which is true. It's a worldwide trend. Some tasks that are getting more and more difficult for a person to do.
Makes you wonder how far these robots can be trusted in your home when you're not there, doesn't it?
It does.
How does the robot know that the sink is plugged and flooding the floor? I don't know.
Very, very interesting, huh?
Yeah. But they are becoming more common, nonetheless.
And we see that Toyota and Honda actually are building robo-servants to help Japan's aging population. Japan, I think, is one of the most famous countries in the world that people talk about for their aging population. So we can see that they're already at work there. And they expect dog-walking bots and driverless cars in the near future.
This is just a wonderful image, isn't it? A robot walking through the park. Because people are getting way too much exercise as it is, right?
That's right. So hopefully those sensors will be very accurate so they can walk the dogs and not have the dogs attack each other and things like that. That would be interesting to see.
But I think we've already seen some driverless cars that have already are already on the market in a limited fashion, right?
That's right. And we have heard recently about the Google car that drives around by itself and uses its computer map to kind of get around by itself.
So we see that the author feels that it's not surprising that we're becoming more comfortable with robots and talking, walking machines in our homes. So we have another person here, Eric Schweikart. He's the design director of Modular Robotics. And modular here means what?
Well, I think in most of the robots that we've seen so far, things like, for example, in those automotive makers, what we see is robots that sort of work together as part of a network. In this case, modular really means independent. And so he's talking about creating robots that don't necessarily work as part of a network or an assembly line. Instead, they can work independently.
Okay, so if I owned one, mine wouldn't necessarily be tied to yours.
Or it wouldn't necessarily be reliant on yours in order to do its work.
All right. And then he also, design director, also points to newfangled dishwashers and refrigerators. I love this word, newfangled. It's kind of an old-fashioned word, I think. My mom used to say this, this newfangled.
It seems like an old-fashioned word to me too, Linda, and I love the definition here in our vocabulary focus. It says recently made for the first time, but not always an improvement on what existed before. So you kind of get the feeling that this may be second rate or it may not be the best made product.
I never knew about the second half of this definition. I've always used it I don't use it very often, but I've always heard it used as just something new that's been developed. But I think it always has the connotation that maybe it's not that great.
Maybe it's in process.
Right. So these dishwashers and refrigerators as entry-level household robots powered by microprocessors.
It makes me wonder if these dishwashers can load themselves with dirty dishes
and
maybe
nice.
Put the dishes away in the cupboard when they're done washing them.
That would be great.
Maybe the refrigerator can get rid of old things so you don't have to touch them.
Well, what does it mean here as entry-level household robots?
I believe it means that these kinds of robots that serve specific tasks, dishwashers and refrigerators that are very high in technology, they're entry-level, meaning it's one way to get robots involved in your household tasks as opposed to the walking, talking kind. But they are still technically robots.
Okay, and so they're basics, right? Kind of
That's
the
right.
basic level.
And in our next section, Paul Berberian, the CEO of a company called Orbotics, says that robots will be bigger than the PC in 10 to 20 years. And that is itself a very interesting statement because, of course, he's not saying they will actually be a larger size. Instead, he's saying they will be more popular or more common. That could be a confusing thing because PC computers, as you know, have been getting smaller and smaller in recent years. But that doesn't necessarily mean they've been getting less popular. And so, he says, they will be bigger than PCs in the next 10 to 20 years, but will be linked to your computing device, either in the cloud or on your person. And so the idea is each person will be served by a wide variety of robots and will be able to control them by a computing device, maybe something like a smartphone.
Right, and we see here that there is a robot ball called Sphero that is actually controlled by smartphones now, and it's also made by this company. So like others in the industry, this CEO envisions. What does envision mean? That's a great word.
It means he sees a picture of it coming in the future, coming down the pipe.
Okay, that's also a good phrase, coming down the pipe, which means in the future. Envisions affordable toy robots for the mass market first, followed by larger devices. So Orbotics actually makes a Sphero. It's this robot ball that you can control by smartphones. I kind of looked it up because it looks like a toy that would be kind of fun. And basically, that's what I found out that it was. You can control it, its movements, with your smartphone.
Well, I guess the idea being that they would develop these robotic devices as toys first so that they can be used in situations where they're less critical. You know, you'd have to have all of the safety standards in place, for example, before you introduced it as a toy. And then from there, you can work on usable applications in other areas.
Yeah, this is talking about the development of it into our everyday lives, I think. And so, yeah, they're starting with toys. And then it says here, while specific task home robots are cool, the big play will be entertainment. And so, yeah, we all want somebody to clean our house, but actually that we're not quite there yet. It's still in the developing phase. So the big play, what does that mean here? It's one of our specialized terms.
It means a bold or daring move made in the hopes of improving something rather than conducting a safe move. So it's a risky move that's very big.
Right. And we've seen before in the past also that things start out in maybe the game and entertainment area, and then they migrate or they move into performing common tasks.
That's right. A good example of that is the Xbox 360 Kinect, which I believe we wrote an article about that in Studio Classroom sometime in the last year. It started out as a gaming system, but as it turned out, it had all kinds of applications for doctors and surgeons. All kinds of different uses.
Right. Well, thank you for joining us today. We're almost out of time. We've enjoyed talking about the new face of robots and what it means for us for the future. And we hope to see you again tomorrow right here on Advanced Studio Classroom. Bye for now.
Goodbye. Bye-bye.